Hello, everybody. Welcome to Cowley Weekly. Leakley. That Cow Leakley is the absolute definition of the shit of a day myself and the venerable Alice Wolfe have had individually, but now collectively. Let's try and put the shit behind her. How are you doing, pal? You good?
I'm all right now. I've like sat down. I feel like I'm just de-escalating. It's just been, honestly, these past 2 days have been ridiculous. Yesterday was worse. It was just, yeah, yesterday, you know, when it's just you wish you'd never bothered getting out of bed.
Yes.
Yeah, it was one of them. So, yeah, it's nice to be sitting down and having a chat. And how are you?
My head's battered, mate. Like, this has nothing to do with the guest I've just recorded with, which will be out tomorrow, like, straight away. He was absolutely brilliant. I've never recorded at that time before. Right. And it... the sun, like Stonehenge at one part of the year, was shining through the windows, which are the other side of this computer. And basically, I'm like in a letterbox of light and there was nothing I could do. I even tried to put a yoga mat up across the window and it just kept falling down. I was like, fuck it, I'm going to have to throw this. And then that was it. Then obviously that meant things ran on. And then we were a bit late starting and you were like, where are you? Are you all right? You'd rang us. I've just saw your messages. Are you all right? Are you dead?
Yeah.
Because normally I'm just sat here going, you all right? How are we doing,
I'll start to panic. No, I've had that in here with this window before because I sit in front of a window when we do. Mm. And I've had exactly the same thing. But we've only ever done one show where I've been here in the morning. So I'd never known it was a thing. Normally we do it in the evening and it's fine. And that one we did where the guest was like, only available in the morning. I feel like I sat through the whole show doing that. And that was with the blinds shut as well.
Fuck, you know, honestly, man, like I'm just starting to like sort of de-stress now. Just on the podcast that's coming out, Paul is the chair of the Sedgefield Labour Party, CLP, Constituency Labour Party. When it comes out, he probably isn't going to be honest. It's incendiary stuff.
Lush.
As soon as I mention the word incendiary, you're like, did somebody mention Molotovs? No, calm down. It's not Molotovs.
it definitely has to one of these days.
Oh, dude, honestly, like, let's talk about this when we're not bound by social media guidelines, yeah?
I don't know. Do you know what? Because it's been one of those days, this is the first time I've sat here doing this show and there's nothing but Guinness in this massive cup. Normally, it's just a cup of tea.
You got Sly Guinness in there?
Yeah. Uh-huh. His life is fucking relentless.
This is the thing. You could have fucking Old Spice in there and I wouldn't know every week. It's just this massive, like, were they like the throwaways from the Sports Direct mug skip? Because that's like, you spill that and you'll just completely wash Newcastle away.
This is the best mug ever. Lady Calstrigen bought me it.
Life is fucking relentless.
She bought me when I was absolutely depressed and turned up on my doorstep with it and I cried.
What a belter. Should we take some comments, see who's in? Who we got? Joanne's in. Evening all.
Hi.
Daly's in. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Paul is the chair of the Sedgefield CLP. Hello, Paul.
Really looking forward to this show. Really.
Yeah, it's out tomorrow. Shelley Kelly, hello, mate.
Hiya.
Ryan Jones is in the house too. Oh, it's not Molotovs.
Hello, no, Ryan. You know. Ryan, I'm disappointed as well.
get on to Nick Clegg or whoever it is who sets these things up, decides what we're allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say. Molotovs. So anyway, on the show this week, we're talking about child poverty in the UK, talking about sub-Saharan Africa and the issues there which lead to migration and the current issues which have sprang up, well, this past couple of weeks, which are even worse upon worse. And just a little bit on, like, celebrities and where the fuck are they when it comes to, like, protests, anti-austerity, the Enough is Enough campaign, that kind of thing. Sounding good.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Before we do, though, like, generally, how are you doing? Are you all right? Like, the world is a bit crazy. Is it treating you kind?
Yeah, I mean, generally, it's just been one of it. It's not like it's been bad or anything. It's just been one of those, do you know, where you just feel like you don't have a minute to yourself. And
True.
like sometimes that isn't good because I'm one of these people who does like get really overstimulated when there's too much going on, and I really need to just like sit down and be quiet, and not speak to people, which is weird when people meet me because I often don't shut up. So I kind of don't realize that I am a lot like that. But I've been writing a lot as well, and I've been, and that's the one thing I always neglect when times are really busy. So I've been trying not to do that and make sure that I'm doing the things that actually really bring me a lot of joy and really kind of get me out of myself. You know, it's kind of, I suppose it's a bit of an escapism really, but it's, I think it was one of those, I was telling someone the other day that for the first time in years, I like experienced like proper flow, and I haven't had that for years. And if you've ever, you know, it doesn't matter what it is you create, whether it be art or music or writing and stuff like that's the thing that everybody really loves, like kind of really likes to get into that zone. And I've not had it for years and years, and I had about 4 days of just pure writing, which was great. Like everything else got neglected. I ended up like being a complete cave troll. Like I don't think I even brushed my hair. I was just like typing away on the computer. But honestly, it was such a beautiful feeling, and it made me feel creative again, and it made me feel like it gives you hope well when
It
you're
does.
living in a fascist sinkhole as well. Like it kind of makes you feel like, you know, it's really important to dream when times are tough,
is.
but you need to do that because it's being able to dream of something better that gets us out of it every time, and that's what we need to do. So that's what I did. Instead of thinking, oh, I need to do this, I need to do that, I need to prioritize this, I was just like, no, fuck it. I couldn't do anything anyway because I was full of cold. So I just let myself do it, and it was lush, and it's done my mental health a lot of good.
Oh, I'm chuffed. Buzzing to hear that, to be honest. I mean, on that similar, I'm really starting to like, obviously, you know, I had brain fog for fucking ages, like when I was like desperately ill. And I get the odd bit of it, but it's not like every sentence I say, I kind of forget what I've said. And then my brain just like goes back to the last like save point. You know, when you get the blue screen of death on the computer and then it just saves it back to that. My brain would just keep jogging back to that last save point. Yeah, you know that one. And I think it's starting to, because I've been doing these things where I've been like doing like brain training stuff. Like some of the things on like confidence, and people might want to do this. It's dead simple. I set up a WhatsApp group with myself, and I'd send things. So if somebody says, like the odd time somebody will say something nice, because we're very quick to go to the people who slag you off online, I'll screenshot it and I'll put it in there and I'll tell myself how it makes us feel. And then when I, like, if I'm having a bad day, I go to this WhatsApp group, right? And I look at that, but it's also got like tasks and things like that. And it seems to have been like retraining my brain, not only to be able to accept like sort of positivity from people, because for a long time, as you know, I was like very closed off because of things that had happened in my life. And I think I've cracked it. I think that simple task of like just retraining my brain to like, it's all right if you forget about a task because your tasks are in there, but here's some lovely messages when you're looking at it, so it makes you feel good. And it might sound a bit hippy dippy and whatever, but it fucking works. So
That's really nice. I think I used to, oh God, no, yeah, that's a much better way of doing it. I think I started doing something like that on Messenger years ago, but I think it's only got like, it was just things that made me happy. I don't think it was things that like positive things people had said. So I think there's like a few pictures of some crows and that gif of Tommy Robinson tripping over the traffic bollard.
Wonderful.
Which does cheer me up every time that
Every
I'm
time.
feeling down. My most recent thing with that is watching the My Son Hunter trailer because it's so fucking terrible.
What is this? Is this about Hunter Biden?
Yes. Oh my God. Like basically, what's the name? Fucking Breitbart or Britbart, whatever the fuck it is. They've made a film called
Breitbart funded this film.
I think so. I'm sure it's them who funded it. Guess who's playing Hunter Biden?
Oh, how are you then? Gina Carano.
She is in it.
No way, because she was cancelled by everybody else. So I think she did a film with Ben Shapiro as well, didn't she?
So yeah, she's in it, and Lawrence Fox is playing Hunter Biden. I'll send you the video after this.
Please, please do.
But no, I think you're right. We do focus on, you know, like if somebody said something shit, or you know, that is what we focus on. So I'm really glad to hear of like, I've never heard of that actually, sending something to yourself via WhatsApp to do that. And that's a good way of like reframing things. And
well, the thing was, right, I've not just done it with that. I've done it with things like a shopping list. So there's me and my partner in it, and it's called the shopping list. And like, because there was something about the brain fog where my brain would just dump everything. Mm-hmm. So I could be thinking for 30 seconds or sometimes 30 minutes. And then it would dump it. And then I would think, oh, 30 minutes, you know, that's a long time. I'm improving. And then the next fucking day, it would be every 30 seconds. So there was no like straight line to recovery. And it was up, it was down, and then it would dump through to the floor. And you'd be back worse than you were like a week ago. And that went on for, as you know, for over a year. But this, with the WhatsApp groups, I've apportioned lots of different aspects of my life. Where it's almost like I outsourced the thinking left brain task related part there, but then put it alongside, because you know me, and like I struggle to accept like positive vibes from people, and just kind of when people say nice things, I just like gloss over and then I move on. But if somebody attacks, I'm like at them. I'm just, you're not all the time, obviously, but I used to be a hell of a lot worse, and I've improved with that, like not reacting to people winding us up. Mm-hmm. I wrote about it the other day, actually, and it was like about how I got bullied for a bit when I was young. And it's because of that. Because when we first met, I'd rebounded from that into a person who took zero shit, like as you saw. And like I wouldn't have anything off anybody. And I think I'm more balanced now, but you would expect to be at my age if you devote yourself to trying to get better at things. So but that's me doing the whole like not able to go, well done me, because like, you know, I could barely think, I couldn't walk, and I was desperately ill like just over a year ago. And where I am now, I'm fucking proud of myself, and for me to be able to say that out loud is like, whoa.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely meant. So how long with it, when you, the WhatsApp thing in particular, how long have you been doing that for? And when was it you started noticing the difference?
Probably 8 months.
Right.
Okay. And after about a month or something, initially it was just like somewhere to place my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now it's forming part of me sort of workflow and schedule, which I can't even believe I've got one. Because like... I couldn't like do like, because you know yourself, it was up and down. I'd start and then I'd just have this big crash.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, shit, I've recorded. I want to launch this thing and I can't, because I don't want to commit to things and not be able to do things over a consistent period. So yeah, man, I'm just absolutely buzzing with it. Tell you what else I'm buzzing about. I downloaded this like podcast statistical thing today. And I don't know if you've seen this, but we're number 5 in the United Arab Emirates podcast charts.
Great.
Yeah, great. I expected a bit more of a reaction than that, to be fair.
These things always really baffle me. The blog that, I mean, I haven't written a blog piece for about 2 years or something. It kind of all went tits up at the start of the pandemic. But at one point there was one, like, it was really popular there as well at one point. And it's just one of those things. It's like, I don't know why. And I'm really interested to know. It's when you kind of see, you know, the list of kind of different countries that something has reached, you always like, you know, if it's really kind of picked up somewhere in particular, I'm always interested to want to know what the reasons were. But there's not, unless somebody kind of gives you feedback, there isn't really any way of finding out.
I've not looked into this software very, very much. But I will, and I'll see if it drills down even further, because there's like a premier package you pay for and all that. But I just thought it was hilarious. Like, I was like, why, how on earth has that happened, and why though? Who there is listening to this?
No, but then as well, it was around about the same time I start getting followed by loads and loads of people from Venezuela, including lawyers. And I was thinking, I've never spoken about Venezuela, I've never written about Venezuela. It's on that one of those, I've got a basic understanding of the politics of what's been going on there, but nothing really massively comprehensive. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I don't know what that was about, why I was being, why there was some interest. I don't know if there was a blog post that was popular there at one point, or I wasn't doing any live streams or anything, so it couldn't be that. I really don't know what the hell it was.
I've got no idea.
And I always find it interesting.
No idea. 2 seconds, the dog's acting a fool. What's the problem? Stay in your bed. Shush. I promise I'll take you for a walk after this. I promise you. That's what happens when you do a double header. They're on the bed behind us there, and they're like, like
Volterine, I promise we will go for a walk afterwards as well.
She did. She did. She ain't walking nowhere. She did.
She hasn't even
this mob, man, they've done well today, like, because I've been working all day. It's like if you do a double header, you've got to research, put it all together, all that.
Yeah.
I'd give them light walking, and I would just gut it for them. But obviously, if you've messed this podcast up, like you nearly messed the last one up, you got in the glue factory, you've been told this. Honestly, last 5 minutes I was like a consummate pro. All I could hear behind is like me, 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 me. So I don't know if it's been picked up on the air. Trouble is, my partner's not here, she's out. So it's like I've got to deal with dogs myself now, and that's not really fair. I blame her for everything. Hope you're watching.
Oh, yeah. I did when we first started. I did see Scraps like waddling towards the back, and I didn't say anything.
That's the one. Like, hold on a minute. I'm going to see what they're doing. Stop whinging, man. Honestly, please. We're number 5 in the United Arab Emirates, man. I know you have no concept of countries, but we're kind of a big deal, yeah?
Talking into the void.
it is, isn't it? Because like it's the complete opposite of the last one I recorded there. I tell you what I'll do. We've just got back here, like, and I've got like proper lighting and all that. I'll get it all set up. It's just like we're still rocking on the fly here. Anyway, what I'll do is first, before we move on to the first section, which will be the child poverty in the UK one. Please do watch this on youtube.com/cowdaily. Reason being is we're trying to get the channel monetized. So if you could do that, we're about a third of the way there. So all watch there, greatly appreciated. Also, big up the MTC patrons. Duncan Paler, Russ Smith, Ryan Jones, Joanne Gillam, David Rowe, Paul Veronica, and it goes on. And I promise you, I'll get to the rest of yous. But we've got a packed show, so we've got to crack on. But much love to all of yous for helping out and just generally being cool as fuck. Child poverty in the UK, Alice, tell us.
Well, yeah, there's a stark number for you. Yeah. So that's the total number of children living in poverty at the minute. So we've got nearly 4 million there.
Crazy number, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a crazy number. The reason we're talking about it is because, just to narrow it down a bit and break it down a bit, there's a new report that has come out with these figures, but one of the, basically Northeast is the highest child poverty rates at the minute, with 38% of bairns in the Northeast who are living in poverty. So that kind of works out at 2 in 5 children. So we've got lots of sort of like facts and figures around there, which we'll break it down even more.
At the 2 in 5, man.
Hmm?
2 in 5.
And in my previous job as well, it was based more around children. So I used to see a lot of it there, and the figures were really high then, but they still weren't as high as they are. That's jumped up again in the last 3 years. And it was pretty high back then as well. So it was just kind of like talking about that, looking at the reasons why it is. One of the things the report says is, you know, because a lot of people immediately go, oh, COVID, and, you know, the pandemic. And we can't rule out the impact that that has had, because it has had a huge impact. But, I mean, the numbers have been rising and rising for years, but they've kind of this particular sort of cross-section that they've been looking at, that's kind of been going on since between about 2014, 2015. Mm-hmm. Where it's been like sharply rising again. So the pandemic wasn't really a thing then, so it doesn't account for all of the numbers. There's been a few different things saying there's been a sharper increase in people who were in children living in poverty where the families are in work as well. Mm-hmm. So there's been a steeper increase there. And there has been a larger rise of families who, you know, where they're not in a position to find work either. Now, I was trying to find some specific data around that. It could be that, you know, the pandemic does play a part in that, because we do know that, you know, the effects of long COVID and, you know, kind of the effects it's had on people with disabilities and things like that. It'd be interesting to see if there was any data specifically around why there's an increase of families who are not in work at the moment, or not able to find work.
That's
basically what we're looking at. So we're only ahead of London at the moment.
Jeez, man, that is crazy. So we've got this here. Shall I read it out? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the northeast of England has seen the most dramatic rise in child poverty in the past 6 years, having risen by almost half, from 26% to 38%. It has now overtaken London to have the highest child poverty rate after housing costs in the UK. Newcastle upon Tyne has seen an increase in child poverty of 14 percentage points over the last 6 years, rising from 28.4% of children living in poverty to 42.4%. These figures have moved the northeast of England child poverty rate from just below the UK average in 2014-15 to the highest of any region in 2020-21. Higher than average unemployment, low wages, and a greater number of families receiving benefits under the old system, which did not benefit from the £20 a week increase during the pandemic, are likely to play a role in explaining the northeast rise.
Mm.
Whoa. That's a mind blower, that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, absolutely. And that's what I think. That's one of the things that really got me. It's that, you know, I've never been sheltered from it. I know, you know, I've kind of known that it's been bad for a number of years, but I mean that really, really kind of, it really got to me. I think, like, we struggled a lot as a family, you know, when I was growing up. So it kind of brought back a lot of things there. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, there was never, I mean, it was absolute hell at times. But that said, there was, you know, I do remember there was always food on the table. I never, you know, despite all the problems that there were, I never went to bed hungry, or anything like that. And it's the thought that there are kids who are. And it's awful because I can't talk about some of the individual stories and some of the things that I came across there. It wouldn't be right to talk about them on air in case I inadvertently kind of, you know, gave up something about their identity. But it is infuriating, and it's infuriating the rhetoric that you see around it, which is, it's still the same old shit, which is that it's something parents are doing. You know, it's that they're lazy, off, they're idle, know, that they're spending all their money on drink and drugs, you know, or it's the all the foreigners are getting the money and we should be giving it to our own. Now, this thing is not, I mean, if you read the report, you can see you can't blame those things on the situation they're in now. You know, it's not down to refugees, you know, coming into the country. That's not where the money is being spent. It's, you know, in fact, there's actually large numbers of, you know, children in all different like ethnicities who are living in poverty at the moment. You know, it's not just affecting one particular group. And the things that the report does make suggestions as well of, like, what should we be doing to try and alleviate this. And some of the things that they've suggested is things like opposed to universal credit sanctions. And which, yeah, they should do that for everybody. I've been saying that for years. And they should be pausing the deductions from universal credit. Now I see a lot of people where that's happening. So what that is, you know, they might be getting their universal credit, which, as we know, is a pitiful amount anyway.
Indeed.
But then they might be getting deductions from that for various reasons. That might be from previous court fines, which might be from years and years ago, you know, from stuff that they did when they were younger, you know, that they've moved on from, or it might be housing arrears and stuff and things like that. So they basically then got this next to nothing to then try and budget for an entire month to like feed a family. And what we know is that, you know, kind of children are disproportionately affected by that, by families where there's been deductions from their universal credit. So they've set a pause to that, and raising benefits payments in line with inflation as well. Again, something we've been banging on about for years. I mean, we've talked on here about having that done for wages as well.
Yeah.
You know, the strikes, it makes sense that, of course, that should extend to people who are on benefits, you know, whether they're in work or not. And it's a problem. And it's a problem that's really, really hard to undo as well, because when you look at the effects of child poverty as well, doing that, it's... Sorry, can you hear me?
I can, yeah. I'm literally engrossed in what you're saying.
No, it's not that. I just had like a thing pop up on my computer, like saying sign in. They might be having problems with audio, and it's like, I don't know what that is. Please.
I can hear you fine. Yeah, don't worry.
Honestly, this is just in line with all of the fucking chaos that has been the last 2 days.
It's it like a full moon or something mental like that?
We just had one, yeah.
It'll be the waning effect of it.
On the tail end of it, yeah. No. Yeah, who fucking knows? Anyway, but no, the effects that we, you know, it has massive ramifications on our entire society. You know, we know it affects kids' development. It affects their long-term and their short-term outcomes. You know, it's, you know, kids don't do as well in school when they're living in poverty. You know, they have, you know, they're at greater risk of both physical and mental health problems. You know, it's there's been a few different like charities who've kind of like been working around this, and I think it was the, I can't remember if it was the Children's Society or the Action for Children, they were like asking kids and young people you know, about what they think the effects are. And you know, one thing, bear in mind, this is children and young people who've said this, was being targeted by criminals as well for various things, because they're more vulnerable. They can be talked into doing things. I mean, you know, we're not going to see fucking Jacob Rees-Mogg's Benz doing county lines, are we? Like, it's, you know, it's just not going to happen. But yeah, we do know that there are people who will target vulnerable young kids, you know, when their families are in the ship. So yeah, it made me really angry, and it brought back stuff. And I just thought, we're still here. And people are still making the same excuses that it's because of refugees, or it's because of, you know, people being irresponsible. When actually, you know, it's that they, you know, they need to go out and get a job, or they, my favourite one is, oh, they shouldn't have kids if they can't afford to feed them.
Like you can predict your earnings like 14 years later.
Well, exactly this. It's like, I feel like the people who must say that kind of shit must have just lived in a situation where their income and their resources have just been consistently good throughout their life.
Don't think they understand fucking economics, because like, unless they're like minted, they're fucked as well.
Well, yeah, in the current situation we're in, yeah. But no, it's a societal problem. When kids grow up like that, it affects them for the rest of their fucking life, and that in turn has, you know, big implications on our society. And we should be doing fucking more about it.
We should.
So that's why I wanted to just highlight that particularly. I mean, depressingly as well. Not that it would have been fine whichever area came out on top. I think obviously with it being the north, you know, kind of the northeast as well, it just kind of really, really hits home.
It sure does. I mean, like seeing like Newcastle there and Wrighton and everything that's occurring is just horrendous. I mean, like, you know, we've been community workers in the area and it's just horrific what's happened. And it's what else is horrific is like people like not around, not in Newcastle itself, but in the wider sort of Northumberland and Northwest Durham have put Tories in. Like these are the people who over the last 12 years at least are responsible. But one of the things that people just kind of like cut off is the fact that like the Labour Party previous to that were shite. And they also took people in the Northeast votes for granted. And then look where that got them. Hartlepool, Northwest Durham, Blythe, gone. Others could go as well. I mean, like Ashton round there, like he was only 800 votes majority or something now, thereabouts.
Right, okay.
You know, it's mad. And people don't who aren't from the Northeast, I can't speak on anywhere else, but we both know, like, over years and years, like, how people have started feeling about the Labour Party. And there was a big upsurge during the Corbyn era of people who didn't vote and others who were completely just like, oh, well, this is worth a try. And obviously, we've been told under no uncertain terms that, no, you can't have democracy when it looks like you're going to have any kind of concessions via the ballot box. We're going to smear the shit out of anybody who tries anything. And we're going to smear the shit out of you too. So sit in your box, go to work and shut up is basically where we're back, which was where we were before this, like the Miliband era, certainly the fucking Blair Brown era, like the lips. It's just the mentality that they have is we're the grown-ups, leave it to us, give you a vote and then shut up for the next few years. That's what we're back to. And I'd just like to tell them all to fuck clean off, and I'll be voting for none of yous, and I'll be doing absolutely everything that I possibly can to highlight the evils of all sides, because here's a chance where we can actually all sides a thing and feel an integrity with ourselves. The government and the opposition are two cheeks of the same arse again. Keep jumping on my social media and calling me Tories. You would be wrong, and it's now funny. Mm-hmm. Please keep bringing that to us. Let's see what comments we've got in. So Joanna's saying, clap Mr. Cow. I assume that's for fixing most of my brain fog. Let's hope it's 100% soon, but cheers, mate. Appreciate it. Emma Carson, what can I do? Emma, I'm not sure what it's relating to. What can you do or what can we do? Like, if you clarify, we'll answer it. Imagination scene in the house again. What up yourself?
Hi.
Michael Dines is in. Hello, mate. I didn't vote Tory, I voted for Laura. A righteous thing to do. You're in Northwest Durham, I believe. Possibly Consett. Nice one, my friend. So before we go to the next section.
I think the question, what can we do, is I don't know if that's in relation to, you know, kind of talking about the child poverty. And I was having a real think about that myself. Because obviously we do like to try and like talk about solutions to stuff on here as well. I mean, when you're looking at those numbers, it's, you know, kind of 2 in 5, I'd say that you're probably going to know kids, you know, in these situations, particularly if you've got kids yourself, you know, there's going to be kind of kids in schools, and it's just, I guess, about kind of, or, you know, what's going on in each individual district, in each individual area might look a little different. So it's kind of finding out what you need. One of the things I was thinking of is, you know, and I know even families that aren't living in poverty, that the whole school uniforms issue is like a massive thing. I mean, I was talking to one of my mates at this, and she was like telling me how much, you know, she's got 3 children. And was telling me what they're expected to pay for school uniforms. And it's not like you can go and, you know, kind of get like a black jumper from Asda or something like you could when we were in school. They might specify colours. It's got to be proper, like, you know, with the logo, like school logos and stuff and things like that. And it's really specific, and it's so fucking expensive, especially if you've got kids who are growing every 2 seconds, you know, who need... you know, who need like a few different sizes. So I know of things where parents have like organized to kind of set up like almost like uniform banks and stuff and things like that, where they can kind of press stuff down. So it's like seeing, is there one of those operating in your area? If there isn't, is that something you're able to do? Is that something you're able to set up? you know, kind of look at what you can do just to kind of like reach out to families. Nobody likes to feel like a charity case. It's and their situation, it might be long term or it might not be, it might be short term, you know. So even if it's just, you know, kind of looking out for those kids, giving a bit of respite. Again, that's something that's quite close to my heart, because one of my friends' families, they, you know, well, there was a couple of my friends and like all of their parents used to kind of really look out for me and stuff. And one of them, her dad just died this week as well. So we lost him, and he was a really good bloke. And that was a family who all he were, I was practically living with them at one point, I think. Yeah. You know, and it was just, but that's just like how it was. It was, you know, it never made me feel like a charity case or anything like that. Kids get really embarrassed, obviously, when, you know, their families have got no money and they can't do all the things that, you know, their friends can do and stuff. Yeah, and it's about talking to your own kids as well about,
definitely.
I mean, about the, you know, things like bullying and stuff and things like that. I mean, kids get really, really, I mean, you'll remember from school, like if you weren't wearing the right label or something.
I remember
like
this very well.
I remember, because obviously I didn't have any like new shoes, and like for PE, I think I got given some trainers, which my dad had got from a charity shop. And there was an actual fucking song about them in school.
What about your trainers?
Yeah.
God, yeah. You're bringing up some heebie-jeebies here, like.
And do you know what? It was like 30 years ago and I still remember the song. And I'm not going to sing it on here anymore. And I'm laughing about it because, to be honest, I've let it go. Now it's not.
I mean, we're still going to chin all these people if you want, like. I mean, that's still a thing.
Well, that's the thing. This is the thing I was thinking about this afternoon. I was thinking about one, and I think he was the one that actually made up the song as well. And it might sound like a weird thing to say because it was so awful, but actually he wasn't a bad kid. Like, and I don't think he really realised kind of why I had them, you know, why I was mm-hmm. wearing them in particular. I just don't think it had really occurred to him. He wasn't a kid who was like really a bully. And I know that I don't have a lot of contact with him now, but I know he's, you know, he's gone from being quite a nice kid to a really decent human being. Who, if I told him, if I like said, you know, this was, do you remember this song and like kind of what was going on there? He'd be absolutely mortified.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the thing. I don't think there was any malice in it. And I think a lot of the time that is the case. There isn't malice, and it's kind of saying, well, you know, making sure that your kids are aware of shit like that, really. Because it still goes on. It still goes on.
Sorry, I just had to like get the two of those little dogs, and just like the amount of attention they need is absolutely beyond a joke. Sorry about that. I was listening to everything you were saying. I was just kind of like, it was like me sort of calming dog, what they're called, those things where you're allowed to take them on planes, the dogs, what's the term?
Emotional support dogs.
Yeah, I've got three. I need three.
Really difficult when I see them because our ADHD brain is like puppy.
yeah
just want to like break off mid-sentence. It's like, no, try and maintain professionalism.
I'll tell you what, we'll take some comments and then we'll move on to the next section. What we got, Michael is saying, yes, concert. Mind you, I only vote for Laura because it was her. I would have spoiled my ballot otherwise. Good man.
Fair.
What else we got? Robert Grady, child poverty is a curse of generations. Indeed.
It does. It's, once it's there, it's hard to get out of it. And it shouldn't be like that. Child poverty isn't inevitable. And that's another thing all of these reports say. But because of the system we're in, once you're kind of in there, it's really, really difficult to get out of.
Indeed. Last comment before we move on. Imagination scene in our area, that is, back when I was younger, I don't think they had logos on uniform. Just get rid of that across the board, in my opinion. Indeed, mate. Good idea.
When I was at school either, and that it just would have been an added nightmare if it had have been as well. Because I can't believe what what they're charging. I honestly think parents should just start, like, I don't know, unionizing and refusing
parents
to do
union. Yeah. Everybody unionize. If there isn't a decent union, start one.
Yeah,
just that's another thing we can do.
Yeah,
just mob up with other people like-minded and go after the people who are trying to take stuff off. With mm-hmm. It's worked in the past, it can work again. Are you there?
I am indeed. Yeah.
All right. I didn't know whether you'd frozen or not. Anyway, I am. You just had that kind of like frozen look on your face. It had nothing to do with technology.
You never know whether it's technology or an absent seizure or just me like drifting off somewhere with me.
Well, between me and you, I know about the absent seizure. So this is why I'll check in with you in case it is an absent seizure rather than the stream freezing on your end.
Javier, it's happened before when we've been on air. I know we've talked about this before. I've given you the heads up, and I'm not sure if other people have ever like picked up on it. But to be honest, there's nothing you can do. It'll go away in a few seconds. Just go.
Well, I never notice anyway. Like, I think you, obviously you're experiencing it, but it's not, no, I've not noticed it ever before until you've like told us, so I would understand what it would be, you know?
Yeah.
So that's how it looks from the outside. But anyway, enough for ye. Let's get on to sub-Saharan Africa. So
let's do that. So tell me the things.
I will. So I wanted to cover this because it's something that I've been like, it's branched off from the climate change research I'm doing on other things. Mm. And what it's about is the fact that currently in sub-Saharan Africa, this is occurring. And this is from Metropolitan Television, which is a media outlet in Ghana. What they're saying is World Bank, Ghana has the highest food prices in Africa. Ranking of sub-Saharan African countries with highest price increases in 2022. Ghana at the top, 122%. Senegal, 110%. Uganda, 107%. And it goes on. So why have I brought this up? Well, I've brought this up because people whinge and complain about refugees and asylum seekers. They never look at the causes as to why people decide to leave their families and their friends and everything they've ever known to leave. One of the reasons is obviously the price of food there. But this is already basically a food desert, and climate change is seeing a lot of internal migration within sub-Saharan Africa, where people are moving within it. The majority of refugees actually go to the neighboring country or a different area of their own country and just kind of circulate around that. There's a smaller percentage, but as we know, a small amount of a big number is still a relatively high number. So we're getting people moving north on the so-called migration routes and heading to Europe because they want a better life and they don't want to fucking die, basically, as well. Yeah. So what else we have here is, this is from the president of Kenya. This is from the West Kenyan Times, .co.ke. So it's actually .co. Interesting. But obviously it means Kenya. What William Ruto, the president of Kenya, said on October the 11th, 2022, we must bring the Russia-Ukraine conflict to an end. We're all bearing the effects of what that conflict portends to us. High food prices we cannot pay for and access fertilizers. So that's happening. That's affecting sub-Saharan Africa, the war also. Obviously, like, they do actually buy in quite a lot of things like wheat, which, as we know, is grown in Ukraine, and Ukraine supplies quite a lot, like the breadbasket of Europe in a lot of ways. But obviously, in a globalized food system, it's heading to Africa. Stuff's coming out of Africa as well. Climate change has also wrecked, like, the heat this year has wrecked so many crops as well. So what happens when you can't eat? You're gonna try and find somewhere where you can, be that around about where you're from in your own country or region, or you're going to head north. And I mean, we haven't spoken about this, right? But, you know, obviously myself and my partner were around Europe this summer, and we went around Calais in the coastal area around there. And I swear, man, it was so upsetting. Seeing predominantly lads running around And that terrified, man. And that trying just to get over. Went up on a hill, and it was obviously, it's really close, like 20 miles, and you can see like the coast of England, south coast, from this hill. And it really hit us, like, that view. I took a picture of it, but I don't think it's come out very well, so I'm not going to use it. But just seeing that, like, what that represents to people who clearly don't know the type of shit we talk about week on week. It's not, why would they? They don't realize it's a fascist hellhole. It represents something different, hope. And you could see that, how it would represent hope, and how, honestly, I'll never forget the look on them lads' faces. Like, and there's cops everywhere. It's just horrible. So what's happening is, like, it's moving further down the coast into the little villages which lead into the other port, because they've got to stop, the lorries have got to stop at traffic light. So there's like gangs of lads are running and are trying to get in, and the cops are chasing them, and it's like cat and mouse all day. So that's happening now. So what do you think the impact of these factors are going to be over the next few years in terms of increased migration? And obviously the political landscape in England, what do you think?
Yeah, it's going to be massive. It's already happening. There's already kind of catastrophes going on right now. You know, look at Somalia. At the minute, Somalia is in the middle of a horrific drought, which is a famine. At the minute, I don't know if famine has actually been declared yet. It should have been. But I know they did this in 2011 as well, because there was a famine in Somalia then. And I think kind of hundreds of thousands of people had already died by the time they even thought to declare it a famine, when they already knew it was. And it's a massive thing. And the what was interesting about that is the presidential envoy for the drought response. He was saying outright, this is to do with climate. This is what it is. It's climate change, and that is what is causing it. And yes, things like the war in Ukraine, you know, things that I think there was like literally a plague of locusts as well, which caused it as well. And COVID as well, the impact of that, they've all affected it, and they have made it worse. But he was quite clear that ultimately it is climate that is the driving factor here. And kids are dying of starvation and kind of diseases which are kind of related to that, you know, kind of stuff like cholera. And he's saying they've just been forgotten about. And he's saying, you know, I think one of the things he was talking about was there was meant to be climate change funds that countries could access, and there's been loads of difficulty with being able to access those funds. And, you know, kind of countries that have been, well, I think that he was saying was like allies, like Britain, have just like forgotten about them in terms of aid. But yeah, when you're not actively, you know, not actively colonizing anything, you know, that's what they do. It's colonization, the effects of colonization as well, which is also been a factor in these situations as well.
Well, indeed. And I mean, like, capital and like this global establishment, if you will, they kind of moved away from like straight up gun barrel colonialization for the most part, because it seemed to like want to do it through corporations and through the private sector, you know. So you'll have like the big oil and gas, obviously, is a great example in Nigeria. Like, they'll go in there. I mean, I know lads who have worked there, and they're under armed guard. Ghana as well, and a lad who worked in Ghana on oil and gas, and same again, armed guard. They've got one bar that can go to, and there's sometimes people get kidnapped, like oil workers, and held a ransom. It doesn't necessarily benefit the people of the working class people of that country. It'll benefit like the government and all the shady dealings that are going on, but it's not really benefiting them, because they're not really the ones who are getting the jobs. It's people from the out, predominantly white workers, actually. So it's like you can see, like, if you look at Africa, right, as a continent, and it's important to like say that, because sometimes people just go, "Oh, Africa." Like, Africa is so culturally diverse, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, it's like saying, "Oh, like everybody in Europe," like, what? Like, we're all massively different, like different languages and whatever. But if we do look at Africa as a continent, just from the perspective of resources and minerals, and it's such a resource-rich continent. And it's been in a bloody stranglehold since the colonial days, because they went in and nicked everything off them, and now they've got like this vice-like private sector grip around most of these resources. If we moved that private sector colonialism out, and the people within Africa had their own destiny, what do you think would that would happen there in terms of education, in terms of like people's access to food, and what do you think it would do in terms of poverty alleviation if Africa had control of its own destiny via its own resources?
It would make a massive difference, but we're probably not going to see that at this point in time. Even the, you know, even kind of unpicking the stuff that was done years ago by kind of, you know, kind of imposing, you know, putting in like Western structures and things there that, you know, that was done years and years ago. And it's, you know, whenever I was talking to somebody about this the other day, you know, they were talking about like women's, you know, we were talking about Somalia and some of the viewers who are like relatively new. My granddad was from there, which is why I talk about it quite a bit. But you talk about things like women's rights, Mo Salah, my granddad. Yeah, he was actually called that as well, by the way.
Mohamed Salah, that's literally his name.
Yeah. You know, but when you talk about things like women's rights and everything like that, again, largely a result of Western colonialism. Lots of places in Africa had patriarchal and matriarchal societies at the time, even, you know, but Somalia had more patriarchal, but even though women had really strong roles in there, you know, in terms of like agriculture and stuff and things like that, even as community leaders and playing a really like pivotal role. But then the colonialists came in and kind of brought in these sort of like Western gendered norms, which basically left women's roles dormant, being looking after the house and looking after the kids and stuff and things like that, and handed the power to men. And it did not work out well.
It certainly didn't.
Unsurprisingly. And just like Western involvement in a, you know, we've talked about Iran before, what's going on in Iran at the minute. You know, look at how the Islamic revolution occurred. Who enabled that? You know, it's not just about religion. It's really not. Have a look. You might be surprised.
Yes, please do. And it may have something to do with our cheeky upstarts who are competing with us in the podcast chart.
And like, that's not a conspiracy theory either. They don't even hide it. They've released files about this, saying that they did this. So it's not a conspiracy theory. That is
nothing we do is conspiracy theory, unless we're now going to speculate on a theory. Like, yeah. You can't do that, man. And like, I it's not a hardship. I don't want it to be that kind of thing. You know, it's like, we've got to evidence everything that we can do from solid sources wherever we possibly can, and that's how it needs to be, isn't it? We both absolutely agree, don't we?
But yeah, this is what colonization has done, and it's not a thing that's disappeared. We're still seeing the effects of that now, and climate change as well. This is like a big driving factor, and you know, people who've been banging on about the climate crisis. Years have been saying it will mean more refugees, it will mean more displaced people. Well, of course it will. You know, if there's a complete drought where there's nothing, or if there's a massive flood, of course, like people, you know, because there's been big floods in Nigeria, of course people are going to be dispersed, and they're going to meet. The problem is growing.
Indeed it is. A bit more info on the situation. So Ghana is ranked first by the World Bank with the highest food prices, as we've seen. According to Bretton Woods Institution, it's 122%. I just wanted to put that in, just because obviously that's the source behind the articles, and we just want to have that in there. So worldbank.org, sub-Saharan Africa has contributed the least to global warming, yet the continent will experience the most devastating impacts of climate change. New World Bank Groundswell Africa reports highlight that urgent collective action to support green, inclusive and resilient development could reduce the scale of climate migration by 30% in the Lake Victoria region and as much as 60% in West Africa. So, you know, I mean, it's another one of those things. sometimes we talk about how do you sell things to people who don't want to hear you, and quite often people don't understand their audience. A lot of people who you'd want to try and win over, the type of people who'd be like, send them back, make it so it benefits them. So it's like, right, you, how about the don't come in the first place, and be like, oh, brilliant. Well, how we do that is by leaving people the fuck alone and letting them determine their own destiny.
Yeah.
But that'll probably affect your standard of living, which is already really bad, because your standard of living is predicated on these corporations and the crumbs that come from the table. If we remove those corporations and everybody work together across borders, do you see where I'm going there, man, who wants to send them back in the dinghies and like pop them with an air gun and all kinds of mad evil shit? If we could sell things to people like it, how it affects them, they'd still tell what to fuck off because they're racist. But, you know, you get me point.
Yeah. I've had a similar thing before where I've said something along those lines about like maybe not selling arms to like regimes, which are like killing all of their own people, and then people don't run away from them. And it's like, yeah, it's like tumbleweed, like blowing.
What about being anti-war? You're not allowed to be anti-war anymore, are you? Isn't it mad? I suddenly became not anti-war when I wasn't allowed to be. That's how it works. I'm already against the next war and this one and all wars. Mm. If it comes to my door, then I'll really fucking fight. Mm. I'm all about fighting then in self-defense because I'm not a pacifist. But all of this, actually, I'm not going to get into that. We're not going to go there. It does connect with the sub-Saharan Africa thing. But I've seen the really, really highlighted thing in social media guidelines. I've not shown you yet, but I'm not even going to fucking talk about it. But we are working on something else where we might be able to talk about it elsewhere. So
lovely. Good.
We'll talk about this off. So just a few more little bits before we move on. Climatic change in sub-Saharan Africa is especially pronounced with intensified temperature extremes, precipitation anomalies, and natural disasters that annually leave millions in peril, injured, homeless, or food insecure, and cause serious and costly economic damage. That's from the IMF. One more. This one's from Zurich, the insurers. These numbers are expected to surge in coming decades, with forecasts from international think tank, the IEP, predicting that 1.2 billion people could be displaced globally by 2050 due to climate change and natural disasters. Hey, we've got it all to look forward to, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. And people kind of reading that as well, like kind of the racists of this island as well, you know, might be like looking at that, kind of thinking that as well, that it will just be in places like sub-Saharan, you know, sub-Saharan Africa. No. It's like eventually you could find that you are one of the people who are displaced because of all
completely
of these
floods.
Like, yeah.
Floods in the UK. Like, think about it. Like, absolutely. We're already experiencing it, you know? So it's like, this is, we haven't even begun.
No.
Like, imagine the like, it's just a bit of Sun Brigade. how are they going to cope, right? When their lecky's off, they've got no air con. And that twist in that face off. How did this happen? How did this go on? Guess what, dickhead? The hippies warned you, but you didn't want to listen. So there you go, isn't it? It's in a bad time for all the world. I'd love, can we, next week, let's try and get back to some positive news as well.
Yeah, we should definitely do that. If you've got
seriously,
it, send it to us.
I sent some positive news in. We'll talk about it because I could do with a lift as well. I mean, I'm doing this like most days as well. So it's like, I feel like I need to scrub myself with a Brillo pad. What I've decided to do is, right, I've thought about it because I've done this for a couple of weeks, right? And I'm like, right, Wednesdays, put a pre-recorded podcast out and do like an office day where it's promotion. It's like replying to emails and all that, but people still get a podcast. So that's what we're going to do from now on, Wednesdays, because we'll put this one out straight away and then I'll put the other one out then, and it means we're on the dailies, isn't it?
Yes.
So anyway, lovely to speak to you once again, and bloody hell, after the day we've both had individually, we've managed to still pull it together. So respect to you as always, mate. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, you too.
Before we go, we'll take some comments from the people. Imagination scene. Climate change will make it much worse. Going on to say most of the Syrian war migrants went to the neighbouring countries. Indeed. And Turkey is the number one country for giving respite and homes to refugees. So I think it's, I don't want to say 1.5 million, but I've said it, but I think that's what it is off the top of my head. But don't quote us on that. Please check that figure out. But it's a high figure.
Yeah.
Possibly more than that as well. Don't have any solutions right now, but the thing is, if we don't talk about them, there'll definitely be no solutions. And like any kind of like new thing, solutions present themselves over time. So we always say, please take these things as a primer and go and find things out for yourself and let me know. Please also share this with people and comment, rate, and subscribe, because I swear to God, if we all work together, we will be able to overtake the CIA and their darkness. We're just in the podcast charts. It's a massive Pyrrhic victory, and they're probably going to kill all anyway in my bed. But we'll still, me dying breath, I'll look at the me assassin and just go, ha ha, we're number one, fuck you. And then he'll just like, silenced gun, fuck you.
Then you hear an aeroplane going over your house.
In it, man. Got a nice little comment, Mike Connell. First time watching live. Live you guys. Live you too, brother. No, I love you. He has some like Stalin-esque heart hands. I can't do hard. How do you do hard hands, man? I can't do hard hands because I'm not a fucking pussy.
Behave yourself.
Yeah, I'm not a dick. There you go. Gender balance. Yeah, man, that's the one. Right, Joanne saying, with Turkey's 100% inflation, as your man said on the MTC board, indeed, man, inflation in Turkey. Mike Connell, asterisk love, we love you too. Wasn't taking the piss, Mike, and loving the fact that you're here for the first time, mate.
Yeah,
love you too,
great.
Mate, love everybody who's here. In fact, and everybody listening on the playback and all that, I love these dogs behind us. But not all the time, because they've been whinging throughout this fucking podcast and the latter end of the one I recorded before this. So it's definite glue factory time, or I might skin them and wear them as some kind of elaborate cape.
Nice.
Anyway, you're our visual person. I'll leave you with that. Have that in your head. Everybody, please comment, rate, and subscribe. Let's defeat the CIA. Together, we can win. Together, we can overturn their dark empire forever. Love yous. Any final thoughts there, Springer?
Other than let's have some positive news next week as well.
Next week, it's a positive news time. And also, just on a level, respect, because we've had rinse out days today and we've still managed to pull a show together. So I'll bell you tomorrow and we'll just fucking cry on FaceTime about like how savage life can be at times. How's that sound?
I feel all right now. It's just like, yeah.
Well, it's because you've been talking to me every week. I'll heal you, you know, yeah, every week. You come here, I heal you, you go. It's brilliant, man. I'm like Dr. Quinn, medicine woman and that.
Oh, fuck me, we're showing our age now.
One of my first wanks. It fucking was. Do you know what I mean? So was the lass in the shop and gated. It's like, I was 14, man. Jesus, man. I'm 45 now. Just telling you. We all wank. We all started wanking. That was Dr. Quinn, medicine woman time, you know. I had the poison. She had the remedy. I had the pulsating rhythmical remedy.
I love it when we share.
In it though.
Great.
Imagine. Anyway, honestly, I've had zero to eat today. Zero, nothing. I've been working since 6:30 this morning to pull these off, and then trying to manage these fuckwits. I was so hungry before I like make this gizzards thing that I boil up, right? And I was like, should I just have a little taste on the end there? I was like, no, you're just hungry. Stop. What are you doing? It's like mad dog gizzardry. Crazy, though, isn't it? Anyway, I've really got to go and eat. It's like ridiculous. And I'm intermittent fasting as well. So I've got an hour to do it before I've got to stop. Magic times, isn't it? Anyway, love to everybody all around the world, particularly our friends in the United Arab Emirates. Sort your like, sort how you deal with women and et cetera, and all that out, and we'll maybe have you as our friends. And also leave gay people alone. Anyway, bye everybody. See you.